Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be delving into UK markets and looking at some of the key economic themes out there at the moment. And to do that, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Morning, John. Good to be back with you.
So, Alan, we were just speaking before we started recording about the FTSE 100, and I think it's apt if we start off with taking a look at this index. Of course, London's leading index of 100 stocks, which, as we were speaking this time last week on the podcast, hasn't really moved a great deal. We were talking about the key levels at the time of 7,877, which is the all-time closing high on the FTSE 100. And then we've got 7,903, which is the highest traded price, the intraday price. We haven't yet, although we look like we could do it, breached those two levels. We're trading up on the day. Just looking here, we're barely 10 points away from that 7,877 level on the FTSE 100. We had a bit of downside yesterday. Of course, there were some rumblings coming out of China. When you're looking at their GDP figures, it was the worst or the second worst yearly GDP growth figures since the 1970s. That caused a bit of a wave in markets, but we're firmly back up again today on the FTSE 100, up about 0.2%. So it looks as though we could breach that level, 7,877, in the very near future, Alan. But when we're looking, a little bit further along the track, when we're looking at UK stocks, it seems that we've had a really strong grind up so far this year, albeit a very short period. But in your view, is there anything that's on the horizon which could derail this rally? We've seen inflation data from the UK this morning. It fell back to 10.5%. Of course, that's very, very high still and will be causing households a lot of problems with rising fuel and food prices. But it's going in the right direction. It's not falling as fast as it is in the United States, but there seems to be a trend now building across major economies of falling inflation rates. So that seems to be a positive. It seems as though central banks are going to be slowing the rates of their hikes, although they will continue to increase rates in early 2023. So they're the two big concerns that we had last year, which seem to be subsiding. So, is there a potential for an upset, or do you think we continue to maybe climb a wall of worry in markets?
Yeah, I was just about to say, John, I think it's that wall of worry that we continue to climb. And if you think about it, when we spoke last year, of course, we looked at what the Bank of England was saying about interest rates going forward, how they'd be likely to, initially, they expected them to go as high as 5%, then it was 4.5%. So I think we can expect further interest rate rises going forward. There's no doubt about that. But also interesting to note that job inflation in the private pay sector, or I say inflation increases in the private sector pay, grew 7% in the 3 months to November. So in the private sector, you could argue that whilst people are worse off overall, for some people, it won't make too much of a difference because they can just trim shopping habits here and there. So I think at the moment, we are largely in line with expectations. And on the back of that, of course, the FTSE is seeing that performance. And but it's also, of course, the FTSE doesn't really represent the domestic economy. It does, but it's more representative of the global economy because we have so many dollar-earning companies listed on here. The pound is recovering somewhat against the dollar, but we continue to see these strong performances. And underpinning this all, of course, there is an expectation that, I've been speaking to various people in the mining industry, and there is an expectation across the industry generally of a huge explosion in value, both at the mega cap level, with the huge mining companies, and also the small explorers too, because the cost of raw materials is going to increase. We're seeing cost inflation there anyway for suppliers, but also the cost of those raw materials will increase in line with inflation. So given that, of course, we are making the transition to a clean energy economy, all of those metals, all of those commodities that drive that will be hugely in demand. So I think we've got a very bright outlook. On the negative front, we have the issue potentially of COVID, although I think the risk has largely receded now. The only risk from COVID, I think, is still with the China economy. And of course, China is an absolute powerhouse, and many companies in the FTSE are reliant on China for sales. So a recovering China, removal of the lockdown there will yield huge dividends for companies selling into that marketplace. So there are these factors, and of course behind everything else, the elephant in the room, which of course is the Ukraine war. How long will that continue? And we're seeing that ebb and flow, dreadful though it is. We're just talking about it, you know, thousands of miles away from where it's taking place, but of course people are getting killed every day there, and it's a dreadful situation. But the impact, it looks set for a prolonged war, and I think the markets have factored that in. But of course, if there are any dramatic changes, notably with Russia prosecuting the war and upping the ante, then of course that's a factor too. But in summary, I don't see. I think we're going to see more of the same, and I think it's likely during the first quarter that we could well see the FTSE 100 break into new territory and break that record.
Yes, yeah, I mean, it could even be today. And it's quite interesting what you pick up on the impact on China, because, you know, if you look at China and compare the Chinese economy to the UK economy, to some extent, the Chinese economy has a bigger impact on the FTSE 100 than the UK economy does. Yeah. Of course, there's a huge weighting towards mining companies. There's BP and Shell, and obviously the exposures to oil, which to some extent is dictated by expectations of Chinese growth. You know, it's been really the growth powerhouse of the global economy for the last 10 or 20 years. And everybody looks towards China for some idea of how global growth will perform. And with them reopening, it's been relatively positive. Miners are up towards some of the highest levels they've been for many, many years, in some circumstances, all-time highs. We're seeing resilience in Shell and BP, and that's providing support for the index. And that's one of the main reasons that we do see the FTSE 100 flirting with all-time highs at a time that the domestic economy here in the UK doesn't look particularly good. So we've obviously mentioned there miners and commodity companies, but we're going to start off with one stock here, Alan, which is particularly exposed to China. It's Burberry, of course, the luxury fashion brand. Again, for many, many years was reliant on China for growth, and it did very, very well over there and really carved itself out a place in that luxury market among Chinese consumers. But they've updated this morning, Alan. So what do those figures look like?
Yeah, it's a third quarter trading update from this powerhouse of a brand, Burberry. But a lot of pundits in the market are looking at Burberry and saying it's lagging behind its European counterparts. But I mean, to be fair, the company's delivered a pretty strong share price performance over the past year. I mean, we're now at year highs of £22.70 per share. Shares up a further 1% on the news this morning. And that's basically a third quarter revenue increase of up to £756 million. Up 5% overall. But of course, like-for-like sales in store were up just 1%, and that was impacted by the COVID-19 related disruption in mainland China. So China is a big destination for Burberry. It's a very important marketplace. We see in the numbers this morning that mainland China sales fell by 23%. So So it's had a big impact. Overall, we have seen that sort of heavily impact on Burberry numbers. But of course, the new chief exec has just come in. Jonathan Aykroyd has a strategy to turn the company around. Of course, with a very strong online presence and repositioning of some of the shops and the outlets. The markets are saying this morning, well, look, you know, Burberry is still a big brand. It's selling well, and given the share price performance, I don't think as an investor you can be too disappointed over the past year. But it's still lagging European rivals. Of course, it's a powerhouse of a brand. It's a huge brand, market cap of 8.6 billion. So of course that's a huge juggernaut of a stock. So in order to turn that round and refine the numbers and streamline costs and improve margins, you know, that's a big commitment, and it's not going to happen overnight. So I think the fact that the shares are sort of trading at these year highs, some of the pundits have been a little unfair to the stock, because it's still a pretty strong performance. And I think given what we've just said about China, you know, the fact that China is now coming out of lockdown, and of course there are still travel restrictions, the travellers are having to test or provide a negative COVID test before they go into certain countries. Of course, the UK has now implemented that too. So that may have some impact, but nonetheless, if the Chinese government are being brave and they're reopening for business, that's going to have a hugely positive impact on the markets. And of course, that's on global markets, not just the UK. So on balance, I mean, you've got as a shareholder, you have a dividend yield of 2.2%. We are at these highs, and of course, this is pretty well at a five-year high. So you could say, where do we go from here? Certainly, if I were a shareholder, I'd continue to hold Burberry shares, but I might want to wait to see some of the froth come off the share price before I dived in as a to buy the shares for the first time.
Indeed. I mean, it's very difficult to, you know, make comparisons with Burberry and their European peers, such as LVMH. Of course, you know, Burberry's a one-off brand, but these companies over in Europe are, you know, all under one house, but have multiple brands within that company. And of course, you know, just in the last month or so, we saw the co-founder and CEO of LVMH become the world's richest man, mostly down to Elon Musk's destruction of Tesla's share price, dragging his wealth down. But, you know, a very steady incline that we've seen from LVMH over the last 2 to 3 years, you know, really has brought luxury brands back into investors' eyesight in terms of companies to place money where there could be volatility in markets. Of course, these brands have a clientele which aren't that impacted by the headlines that we've seen this morning in terms of inflation. Rising food prices won't do anything to the buyers of brand LVMH or Burberry. But I agree, Alan, looking at the share price here, going back for some years, you know, Burberry's been a steady gainer. It obviously suffered during the pandemic. But again, I'd agree, looking at these shares here, they do look a little bit on the high side in the short term, given that we've probably seen a lot of the Chinese reopening priced into Burberry shares already. So it'll be interesting to see in their further updates how the Chinese reopening actually impacts their sales going forward. So we're going to move on now, Alan, to a company which is not for the faint-hearted. It's Argo Blockchain. There was a period last month where it looked like the end for Argo could not be that far away with some financing issues. But there's been quite a positive update for them recently, and that's been reflected in the share price. So what's been happening there?
It's been a perilous journey for Argo. Of course, we everyone's aware of what's happened to the Bitcoin price. Has fallen through the floor and cast out with the collapse of the entity that made all the headlines before Christmas. That's really impacted on investor confidence, both in crypto and also, whether, people are now asking questions about whether crypto is just more than a passing fad or yet another South Sea bubble. But I think there is, cryptocurrency is here to stay. It's an extremely useful alternative form of decentralized payments. And of course, what Argo blockchain does, it mines Bitcoins, and it has taken the last couple of years to invest into building mining centers for crypto. It has had a mining center in Texas, of course, the Helios Center, and invested and built its arsenal of Bitcoin mining supercomputers, which of course take up a lot of power. So they have they had a very sort of competitive supplier for electricity there. Ditto in Quebec in Canada, where they have a mining center, and of course that the electricity is hydroelectricity there. So again, very cost effective, but battered by the Bitcoin price. What Argo does, it of course reports every month how many coins it's mined, and we get these updates. But of course, those became largely meaningless toward the end of last year, as question marks were raised over whether the company can actually continue. But on the 28th December, it announced a transformational agreement with Galaxy Digital, who have been a long-term supporter of Argo blockchain as a company. It sold the Helios facility to Galaxy for $65 million, along with a package to refinance its asset-backed loans with a new $35 million loan from Galaxy, and that's reduced Argo's indebtedness by $41 million, and also simplified its operating structure. But through this, Argo maintains ownership of all of its mining machines, and Galaxy will now be the host for Argo's fleet of Bitcoin mining machines at the Helios Center. So this has been transformational, and of course, a lot of shareholders and investors breathed a sigh of relief. So you have to now look at Argo, I think, as a recovery play. And I know the business model has been slammed in so many quarters by so many well-known pundits. But I'm just going to focus on the fact that there still is a business here. The company is still generating revenue. It's got a decent balance, debt balance sheet with some $20 million on the balance sheet. So as with all technology companies, it's often a case of there are loans provided and mezzanine funding arrangements to get the business off the ground in the first place. And as the business goes forward and develops and the revenue start to grow, then those packages can be refinanced. And that's what's happened here. But of course, it's happened amid a crash in the Bitcoin price and a further challenge in December, where huge storms in Texas impacted on the capability of the Helios Center to complete the mining activities. So they've had all of these issues to deal with. But Peter Ward, the chief executive, worth noting, Peter Ward is the only chief executive in UK, whether a UK listed company actually takes his salary in Bitcoin. So we don't know how that's continues to be structured. But Peter Ward said, with this transaction, it marks the beginning of a new chapter. They have a world-class mining facility, mining operations will continue both at the Helios Center in Texas and at its own Argo's owned operating facilities in Quebec. So going forward, we're going to have more news on this. Looking at the share price, of course, there's been a huge collapse over the past year, down some 82%. But really, since that update, we've seen shares come off their lows of 5p. And remembering that at its peak, Argo was valued at some $1.5 billion. So it shows how far this company has fallen, but the model's still there. So if there's a resurgence in Bitcoin, Argo is now restructured and refinanced. So there's certainly, I believe, some potential upside on offer here. And since that announcement in December, you know, we've seen the shares recover from lows of 3p. So anyone who got into this stock at that point will have done very well indeed. Shares are now 14p, so it's already a multi-bagger. Gives the company a valuation of just under 70 million sterling. So again, I think this is very much a trading stock as well. There's been a considerable amount of trading volume given what the company's been through and where it's going. So the company also published an AGM statement a few weeks ago, and said that during December the company held 141 Bitcoin, of which 116 were Bitcoin equivalents, and going forward the issues that the company's faced are very much behind it, and there's going to be more information on the growth strategy coming out of the company in due course. So we have some numbers as well. We have the company reported some £990,000 pounds into the accounts during December. That was the mining profit. So the company's cash generative, and I think speculative investors can look at the Bitcoin price, take a view on where that's going to go, and then take a look at the fact that Argo has an incredible volume, an incredible resource at its disposal, and can ramp up production pretty rapidly, and of course ramp up revenues likewise. So a speculative buy with Argo Blockchain.
Alan, when we're looking at Argo, you know, looking at the gross margins for the last couple of months on the mining activities not being particularly fantastic.
No, they're not.
I mean, is it the case that if we see Bitcoin remain at this level or even fall, that the deal with Galaxy was simply delaying the inevitable with Argo Blockchain?
I think that's entirely possible. And of course, you know, we're in a speculative, risky marketplace. And I think a lot of the fundamental attraction of Bitcoin has been was destroyed with the scheme that was uncovered before Christmas, not with Argo, I might add, with the guys based out in the island, wherever they were, and I think it's going to take the market some time to recover from that. But you know, as a store of value, Bitcoin has been so hugely popular. So many people have bought Bitcoin, and I'm looking at people who you wouldn't probably class as investors in the traditional sense. It's just Bitcoin has become such a phenomenon in its own right. So many people hold it that it's still a very liquid market. So I think there are opportunities. And of course, when something crashes and the confidence is taken out of the market, it does take time to recover. But given the sort of moves Bitcoin delivers for traders, it could very well deliver some sharp upward movements. And I think we've seen a few moves in the past few weeks to indicate that that potential, or that nascent potential, is still there. So, would you invest into Argo at this point? It's probably not an investment, it's a trade. But I think there is huge potential, but there's also significant risk as well. So you have to factor that into account when making a decision.
Indeed, I think you highlighted there significant risk, and looking at the share price may prove to be a dead cat bounce. But you know, if we start to see Bitcoin move again, Argo Blockchain is going to be one of those companies that's surely shooting up behind it, and one that we will be covering on the podcast when we get further insights. So we're going to move on now, Alan, to the final company that we're going to discuss today, which this type of company is a company that I really like. It's a good example of British engineering, precision engineering. It's AB Dynamics. Looking at the chart here, it's had a very solid 2022 that's been reflected in numbers, very good revenue figures. But it's taken your eye, Alan. What's jumping out for you?
Yeah, well, like you, John, I'm a big motorsport fan, as you know, and I think I love British engineering innovation. We have some of the finest engineers in the world, and some of the most of the Formula One industry is based here, for instance, and AB Dynamics are an example of our expertise, which is basically sold over the world and forms an integral part of the safety systems in modern cars today. And that's what the company does. It was founded by Tony Best in 1982. Tony Best is formerly worked for McLaren and for Williams, of course. Company was afloat in 2013 and really has gone from strength to strength, very relatively unaffected by COVID. But of course, it does sell into China, and sales into China have had some impact. Dr. James Rao took the helm as chief executive once Tony Best retired. But the company has the most advanced durability testing and precision control models in the world. It's used, its clients include all the top 25 global vehicle manufacturers, and its equipment is integral in all seven European NCAP laboratories. And that's the one where you see the crash test dummies smashed into posts in cars, all the rest of it. That's all of the AB Dynamics equipment is embedded within that. And of course, more recently, we've seen innovation in the autonomous vehicle marketplace, which is growing fast. And of course, tech capital, owners of Guidant that have the autonomous vehicle systems. So AB Dynamics are also major players in this area too. The company announced full year numbers at the end of November, so shortly before Christmas. 23% hike in revenue to 80 million. EBITDA up 21% to 16.5 million. Adjusted diluted earnings per share up 90% to 44.5p. And the company has a healthy cash balance currently of 17.6 million. Also raised the dividend by 5.3p. And also integrated another acquisition. And that's also something else the company's done very successfully over the years. It's integrated acquisitions which have enhanced its margins, and also, given the company improved economies of scale. So the company said then that it's had a solid forward order book, and its future growth, very much supported by long-term structural and regulatory growth drivers. So that's a very solid market to sell into. And of course, that's in active safety systems and autonomous vehicle applications. Dr. James Rouse said that it was an outstanding performance in a challenging market, and they saw significant growth opportunities going forward. Then last week we had the AGM statement where the company said the first 4 months trading is in line with expectations, and it's maintaining its full year guidance for the current year. And again, this is what the company's done pretty well year on year. Solid forward order book. The Ansible acquisition it made is bedding in well, and expects further strategic and financial progress. So here we are now. The shares are £16 or £16.42. Year high is a bit higher than that. Actually, last year, the shares were £18. And it then dropped off to lows in March of £9.20. And that, I think, was based on the uncertainty of the outlook at that point. But certainly, if you look at the five-year chart, we've seen during 2020, in fact, during the late 2019, and then late 2019, we saw the shares hit sort of five-year highs of £27 a share. So I think given the fact that the company is building sales, building margins, China is now open for business, and China is a major market for AB Dynamics, I think this company's got great further growth potential. Also pays a small dividend too of about 0.3%. So not a huge dividend, but it's certainly a growth stock, and I think a very solid company to own shares in.
Indeed. I mean, as I go back to my initial point there, the numbers are very good and certainly worth having a look at there. And we're going to be due a further update from them in the coming months. That's certainly worth keeping an eye out for as well. So just a recap of the stocks that we've discussed today. First of all was Burberry, the ticker of BRBY. It was then Argo Blockchain, which has a ticker of ARB. And we finished off with AB Dynamics, which has a ticker of ABDP. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast this morning.
Many thanks, John.
So Alan actually just mentioned Tech Capital and Guidant, the autonomous vehicle company. We're actually going to be speaking to the CEO of Guidant on the podcast this week. So do stay tuned for that. He'll be providing an insight into the company as well as the wider market. So one that we're looking forward to and should be released before the end of this week. Thank you very much for everyone for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.